Hi there, I'm Natalie Silverstein. I'm an author, a speaker, a mom of two teens and one emerging adult, and a passionate advocate for family and youth service. While I was researching my second book, Simple Acts, The Busy Teen's Guide to Making a Difference, I learned about so many big-hearted tweens and teens who are volunteering, fundraising, starting nonprofits, and becoming social entrepreneurs and activists. I wanted to hear their stories, and I wanted to celebrate them and share them with the world so that everyone can be as inspired as I am. I hope that after listening to these short episodes, you'll go out into your community and share your light, your talents, gifts, and strengths to help others. Because the truth is, every person can make a big impact, one simple act at a time. On this week's episode of Simple Acts, Big Impact, I'm speaking with Zachary L., a high school senior from New York City. Zachary has been involved in family volunteerism throughout his life, and prior to the pandemic, served as a peer tutor for underserved youth in his community. But during the early days of the lockdown, he had an experience that opened his eyes to the digital divide. He was inspired to start a youth-led organization called Philanthropy for Technology that is working to bridge that divide and level the playing field so that everyone has the tools they need to learn and thrive. Well, hi, everybody. I'm excited to introduce you to Zach. Hey, Zach, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, how old you are, where you go to school, what you like to do, all that good stuff, and then tell us about the work that you're doing.
So my name is Zachary Ludwig. I'm a senior in high school currently. I go to Horace Mann School in New York City. And I guess a fun fact about me is that I lived in San Francisco for 2 years in sixth and seventh grade.
Nice.
My work, well, my organization that I founded is called Philanthropy for Technology. And we like to call ourselves a youth-centric effort to bridge the digital divide. We know that by putting devices in the hands of underserved communities and the organizations which help them, we can help close a wider opportunity gap in America. And I think that's the short summary.
Right. That's the elevator pitch, as we like to say. So tell us a little bit more, though. How did this get started? I'm going to guess maybe it got started over the pandemic, but why don't you tell us? Tell us the whole thing right from the beginning.
You're right about the pandemic. I guess you could look far, far back. When I was younger, my parents would always take me to soup kitchens. I think it's pretty timely, but we'd every Thanksgiving, even though we're a Jewish family, we'd go to a church and help serve meals to the elderly and package meals for those that can't leave their home. And I think that really helped me as a person value service and giving back to the community. And then I already mentioned that aspirational goal of evening the playing field for future generations across the country, especially in education. But besides that larger goal, I really started Philanthropy for Technology because the digital divide took center stage in my own life. I had, around the time, it was my freshman year of high school before the pandemic, I had begun reading Common Sense Media, who are a great organization that deal with tech and youth. I'd become reading their reports on the digital divide across the country. And then when my school went online to COVID, Horace Mann had a great response. We had Zoom immediately. It's a private school, so everyone had devices. But at school, I'm now the co-president of the program, but before I was just a tutor for what we call our Saturday morning tutoring program. We typically have kids in person up to school, and we're back in person now for 2 hours every Saturday morning for tutoring and free lunch. But we did try going to Zoom when the pandemic first started, and we had success over Zoom my sophomore and my junior years. But that freshman year is when we first started, there were no tutees showing up. And it's free tutoring. A lot of kids need academic help. Everyone appreciates it. I was very sure that it was not because the tutees did not want to show up. They did not want to learn more. But I was almost positive that it was because they couldn't show up at all. And I thus realized how large the problem would be with schools forced online during COVID. And if students didn't have devices and couldn't attend their school days in general, that would just severely hinder education. And it was the pandemic. I found myself with a lot of time and I realized hey, maybe I want to do something about it.
Right. I think it's amazing what you're doing. I love that you started this organization. So tell us specifically kind of nuts and bolts. How do you raise money and then purchase devices? Do you raise money and give it to schools so they can purchase devices? How does it work?
So starting the summer of the freshman year, that was after I realized this was such an issue through tutoring, I basically went into a mad dash to create a website. It got almost addicting, editing it and adding new things. And that website's, we eventually launched the project in the middle of my sophomore year. That website is where we house all our information for the most recent projects. And so there we have a list of all the projects we're working on. We're usually working on one at a time, and then we also have examples of our past projects. And from there, we know that people can read the websites. If they feel engrossed by the projects, they can donate to us as an organization. So we raise the money like that. We also raise the money just through sending out emails and also sometimes by reaching out to large organizations, though that hasn't really been the most common for us. And once we raise the money, we, depending on the organization we're working with, we'll either purchase the devices and ship it to them, or we'll donate the money to the organizations and have them purchase the devices themselves. And it really comes down to who's getting educational discounts, who can we trust, who's getting tax benefits, and just the most efficient way to use the funds we're getting and to make sure they're actually going to the cause people are trying to support.
Exactly, because I think you raise a good point that, you know, many times a nonprofit organization, a school might have a relationship with, you know, someone who sells these devices and they might get a discount, right? Or they might be able to buy it in bulk in a way that you wouldn't as an individual. And so that's amazing. So these particular projects, this is, how do you connect with those projects? Like, how do those projects sort of come to be?
So far, like through our fundraising efforts, we've been able to complete 5 projects. We're working on 2 more in the status quo. And total, we've raised $21,000 for the projects. The connection, the first project, I had someone just like a mentor helping me. It was more with actually the creative side of the website and just how to make this a marketable product, how to make people read it and be like, oh, they seem like a legit organization. They have a real mission behind them. They're not just, this isn't just a one-off project. This is something I can get invested in and support. And I think they helped me build up the website to a standard where people aren't looking at it being like, oh, they're focusing on technology. Why don't they have a better website? It was a real website right. To almost make us an organization people could trust to get stuff done, to trust to have the impact we're claiming to have. And that mentor introduced me to my first project. We were working with a teacher in Cincinnati. This was earlier on in the pandemic, so school was completely online. And we ended up supporting them with headphones for their at-home learning. The city had actually distributed laptops, but especially when you have multiple students in the home or parents working from home or just chores going around. And often students only have like one common room where a lot of different people are trying to work. Headphones are really key towards both hearing what your teachers are saying, but also being able to communicate with your classrooms in class, not getting distracted.
So I love that. I love that someone pointed that out, that, you know, here we are, they have laptops, but they need headphones. So now what are we going to do, right? You have to just keep asking the questions and like peeling back the layers of the onion, you know?
So afterwards, the projects have came through a variety of like personal connections, family connections, organizations that I work with through other extracurricular activities, and even people, we have a forum where organizations who are interested in receiving our support, who are helping out their local communities with technology, or teachers in the classroom who need technology to do their work better themselves, can reach out to us and ask for assistance. So we've found projects through all of those methods. And I think it's both down to what do we want to take on at this time? Like, what's an issue that's important to us? What's something unique, new we can do that we think will get our donors excited and motivated to help bridge the digital divide? And also, who needs the help the most?
Did you learn anything in this process? Were there any lessons, you know, any challenges that you faced?
I think that the biggest challenge, I, as a founder, took on some ambassadors to help me with this work, help reach out and fundraise in new communities. And these ambassadors are across the country. There's one in New York City. We have 2 ambassadors in Austin, an ambassador in San Francisco, an ambassador in Los Angeles. And it's not easy to manage a team and trust a team that I've never met some of them in person. Like, some of them are my friends, but some of them are just people who are really interested in the cause and use our website to apply to be an ambassador. And I also, fundraising in other communities that are completely foreign to me is also quite difficult, just because I don't know the issues they're most passionate about. I don't know the best way to reach out to them. I don't know the formalities or the small bits of interaction that are really important when fundraising. So it's been a challenge both to work with a team that I've never met and to know what roles they're best at, what I can trust them with. And it's also a challenge to fundraise in different communities. And I think the website that I spent so much time building has actually been really core to that solution, because the website almost serves as a backdrop. It's like it's guidelines. It's almost like your bullet points. It's not bullet points, but it's your slideshow that a presenter can work off of. And then I'm able to trust ambassadors to reach out to their own communities when fundraising, because they know how to best reach out to their communities. They know how to tailor their outreach to get the best fundraising possible out of the people they interact with on a daily basis. So if I can give them that freedom while still having the content and the backbone there, it allows me to really trust them to do the work, since I know that the message is still embedded in there somewhere.
Well, and that's really an important message. I think that you spent a lot of time, as you said, like you worked really hard. You worked with a mentor to make sure that the website was accurate and that it looked good and it really expressed what your mission was and how this works. And I think that's your calling card, right? And to your point, if someone can look at your website and really understand who you are and what you're doing and trust you, I think that helps with fundraising, that helps with helping the ambassadors to fundraise for you. So I think doing that legwork in advance, setting yourself up for success, was so, so important. And I love also that you mentioned working with a mentor. That is something I talk to teens and young adults about all the time, about social entrepreneurship or starting a nonprofit. You have to find a mentor, somebody who's done this before, who's maybe a little older than you, who can help guide you, answer your questions. That's really important. Tell everybody where they can find you, where they can learn some more, where they can maybe donate, social media, website, all that good stuff.
So our website is www.philanthropyfortechnology.com. The words are spelled out and that's a four in the middle, like a number.
And do you have a social media?
We have an Instagram that it's also the same account name, just at philanthropyfortechnology. And also feel free to, if you want to get involved, you have any questions, if you want to become an ambassador or even reaching out to see if we could support you on a project, feel free to fill out the forms on the website or email me at zacharyludwig1@icloud.com.
Amazing.
I'll try and respond quickly.
Absolutely. We're wishing you so much luck in the college process. I'm wishing you very happy holiday season. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Take care. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening. If you were inspired by what you heard today, please follow, rate, and review. These things really matter. And if you know a tween or a teen who is doing great things in his, her, or their community, send them my way. I'd love to meet them and share their stories with a world that could really use a dose of inspiration right about now. You can get in touch with me through my website, simpleactsguide.com. Until next time, remember to keep eyes, ears, hearts, and minds open to the needs of others, and always be kind.